This is the Oanda Podcast, brought to you by Jazz FM's Business Breakfast.
This is the Oanda Market Insights Podcast. Each week we preview and review the big business and market stories with Oanda senior market analysts from around the world. And this week it is Ed Moyer in New York. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
No Craig Earlham this week, Ed. I'm very pleased to say that Craig is the proud father of a second child, although we don't know what sex it is at the moment.
That is correct. The excitement from the Earlhams is contagious. I think everyone is just feeling happy for them. And I bet you we're going to get a bump up with that UK retail sales reading in the coming months from the Earlham family.
Well, if only Mothercare was still open in the UK, they would have a bit of a bumper weekend coming up. But sadly, that closed down a few months ago. Okay, let's start with US stocks. They continue to consolidate since June, and things are going to be very much dependent on how much stimulus we are or we're not going to see over the next few weeks and months. And we were saying off air, providing the economy doesn't do too well, the stimulus will continue.
Exactly. And I think right now the recovery trade has been complicated because right now, you know, we've had several days where we would have headlines that suggest the proximity of a vaccine is getting a lot closer and, you know, everything would, you know, shoot higher. But I think the key foundation idea that you're going to continue to see equities remain fairly attractive is that you're having this, despite all these second wave fears and concerns that there will be permanent damage to some parts of the labor market, there's still improving trends in credit. There has been a significant rebound in some parts of the labor market. Business sentiment is it's mixed, but there are signs that it is improving. And there is hope that the global economic recovery will overall improve with Asia and Europe outperforming the U.S. So I think that there is a lot of skepticism right now with the U.S. They kind of had a very poor COVID response. The reopenings have been chaotic. And we have that a political risk that is starting to brew, especially with the election coming up. So you're starting to see that there's all these different drivers, and they're probably providing just that ample support though for calls for more stimulus. And the debate on the fiscal response in the U.S. is starting to heat up. President Trump wants a payroll tax cut. Democrats have already outlined what they're looking to achieve. And the expectations are pretty strong that you're going to get more stimulus from the U.S. government. Fed's Brainard this week highlighted that, you know, the Fed, you know, has kind of been on hold and that further accommodation is likely to be needed. And, you know, when we take a look at what they've done since March, it's kind of laughable that they're still, you know, need for significantly much more stimulus on by the Fed. But that trade's not going away anytime soon. And that is ultimately what is likely to provide, I think, some strong support for U.S. equities. And when we look over into Europe, you know, we're finally seeing progress. At least there's high hopes that there will be progress on that, the EU recovery fund, and that we're going to see finally they've been talking since February, but that the Frugal Four is going to kind of outline their objections, but ultimately concede, and we're going to see that those loans and grants are going to come through, and that's going to be very supportive for the EU recovery trade. And Europe has been handling the virus a lot better than the U.S., and you're going to probably start to see European assets outperform, and that should provide a little bit of a bid for the euro, which has been slowly increasing as of recently.
And as you said, the handling of the virus certainly been better so in Europe rather than the United States, and that is certainly hurting Trump in the polls. He fired his campaign manager this week. I'm sure he wants as much stimulus into the U.S. economy as possible. and the cuts in payroll tax you mentioned, because he needs that. He needs that desperately. I'm not saying that Trump is a beaten man because, well, his base is still strong and the economy could recover. And let's be honest, Joe Biden is not the strongest of candidates. It'd be very interesting to see what happens when Biden picks his VP, because that actually could make a bit of a difference, although it hasn't made a huge difference in elections over the historical period. I have to go back as far as JFK picking Lyndon Johnson to find something that really made a big difference. But Trump's certainly under pressure at the moment, isn't he? And he needs some good news, doesn't he?
Yes, very much so. And I think you know, your point about the VP candidate is something that many Americans are focused on. But Biden is almost 78, and I think you're going to see that.
He's only going to do one term, in other words.
He's going to do one term, and I think the risk is that you're going to see that if he does go the progressive candidate, that is going to really, I think, swing a lot of momentum back into Trump's favor. So I think Biden has kind of narrowed his options, highlighting he wants to select a female, an African American female, is what he's been most recently saying, and I think that right now the expectations are high that it will be a female, but I would not be surprised if he chose one of the more moderate candidates out there. But that is just one of the key things to focus on. I think as now, you know, the honeymoon is over for Biden. I think his economic plans are coming to question, his clean energy initiatives. I think that you know, the margins of his lead in those polls in those battleground states, they're varying from anywhere from 5 to high single digit percentage points, and I think that you're probably going to see that gap narrow. There's not been a significantly offensive campaign against Biden just yet, and I think the president is going to go extremely offensive in the coming weeks. And you know, as you mentioned, he's a flawed candidate. He's had many failed attempts at running for office, and I think that the best plan for him is to not have as many speaking appearances and to just limit the amount of debates and see the hole that President Trump has dug himself into and just try to ride this out. I think there's a big expectation on Wall Street that we're starting to see investors now have to price in that risk that we could see a blue wave. You know, a month ago there was a small chance that Biden could become the candidate. And now I think right now it's probably, some people would argue that Biden is the favorite right now. I think it's still a coin flip. I think there's too much unknown and a lot can happen in the next few months. I think Biden is right now going to really need to, pick that candidate and hopefully, we'll be able to see how the country progresses with this virus. But right now, there are signs that the hospitalizations are trending lower. The death counts are plateauing, and we could start to be seeing that the U.S. be getting on the right side of this again, even though cases are surging.
Yeah, it might actually, timing-wise, work out well for Trump, although, of course, there is constant talk of a winter wave, certainly here in the UK and in Europe. We're scared of that, a second spike in cases once the winter sets in. And of course, the election is in November, so it could work either way. I sort of disagree with you about Biden from the point of view as a candidate, compared with, say, someone like Hillary Clinton. Donald Trump won the election, without getting too much into the politics of it, mainly because people didn't like Hillary. And that middle ground of 20%, rather than the two bases right and left, they're going to vote right and left anyway, aren't they? But it's that middle ground, which are the swing voters, which is all important. And Biden is by no means perfect, but he's certainly not Hillary Clinton. And you'd expect him to win against Trump unless the economy can recover quite substantially.
I think that is a good point. And we have to really assess the damage that has been done to the Trump campaign. Trump, and one of the biggest polls that or headlines that I've focused on is that when we take a look at how Trump has been polling with uneducated white Americans, his numbers have dropped off significantly. That was his base. That I mean, if the heart of his base is dwindling, you know, there's going to be, I think, a big amount of concern that you know, he might not necessarily outperform in those red states. The battleground states are some of them have been ravaged by the virus. So I think you're going to see many. I think people anticipate that this is going to be very close. And
is it because of the threat of unemployment or the increased unemployment for those white, blue-collar, working-class voters that's made all the difference, do you think?
It's possibly. I think that his resistance to extend some of these benefits are really weighing on many Americans. A good amount of the population still is paycheck to paycheck, and if you're we're still well over, we're around 11% unemployment, and if that is only going to improve to 8% by the election, you know, that's the people that are unemployed are typically a good amount of them are from his base. So I think that is not likely going to see any major improvements leading up to the election. So there's a tremendous amount of data that we're trying to assess. But right now it's, you know, the markets, you know, before this pandemic were 100% counting in Trump to win and for the Democrats to barely hold on to the House. Now, you know, we're starting to price in. There is a chance that we could have a blue wave where, you know, you could have a Biden presidency with control, getting control of the Senate. And that would, you know, cause for sweeping reform, which, you know, would mean higher taxes for tougher regulation for a lot of these mega cap tech companies. So that will definitely weigh in on the outlook. However, I think that would just mainly trigger more of a cyclical rotation. But still, there's a lot to unfold. And I think, you know, you bring up a great point with that second wave. That that is going to be key. And that might really impact how voting occurs and whether or not we get the results on time.
It could work both ways, though, couldn't it? Because if there's a lot more, if there isn't a second wave in November and we've sort of licked this pandemic, I doubt that's going to happen. But you know what? If it's all about expectations, isn't it, really? And if things aren't anything like as bad as many are predicting, then that could work in Trump's favor. The optimism, the positivity will be back in town and people will want to go with what they know. We better talk about the other side of the Atlantic, and otherwise Craig, who I'm sure will be listening to this podcast as he's feeding his new edition, he'll want us to do a bit of Europe, won't he, and the UK. And just the final thing on our coronavirus, so encouraging news on this side of the Atlantic for the latest vaccine trial from AstraZeneca, which no doubt has done a lot of good to their share price, but also everyone else's as well, where there's some encouraging results.
Yes, very much so. I think that we've been getting a lot of positive vaccine updates. You know, we're right in the middle of these phase three trials are kicking off. And, you know, the phase one, we've seen lots of positive results. I think that you're going to probably see people remain optimistic that, you know, there will be a vaccine in place or vaccines in place by the end of the year. You know, I think that whether it's the best vaccine that comes first, that is tested and has the least amount of side effects, probably not the case, but there is hope that we're going to have a vaccine. The UK is likely to, if AstraZeneca and Oxford are successful, they're likely to see, I think, a stronger outlook in the short term, based off of just the vaccine hopes. But I think you're. I mean, in China, we have CanSino, we have Moderna. Everyone has been delivering significant achievements in these phase one clinical trials, and I think there's over 100 vaccines being tested. There's high hopes that, you know, something will be in place, possibly, you know, by the end of the year, you might have the most vulnerable be eligible for some vaccines. And that is, you know, a very promising story, I think, that could develop. And right now it's a big part of the recovery trade. It's a big part of the calls for economic activity to pick up. And I think hopefully that continues to head in the right direction. And right now it looks like if it does, I think you're going to see that just kind of help keep that global risk appetite trade going. And that you know, should probably see Europe outperform, and I think in the next couple months.
Okay. Earlier on in the week, we heard from the ECB president, Christine Lagarde, announcing that interest rates will remain at zero. No changes to the bond buying program. That was the last major meeting before the break for the summer. But of course, we've got this EU summit. What are we looking at there?
Well, the two-day summit wraps up tomorrow. And there's high hopes that you're going to finally see EU leaders come through. They're going to deliver a fiscal stimulus response. And this is going to mean that the Frugal Four, the Netherlands, Austria, Denmark, and Sweden, will come to terms with the other countries and have an agreement on whether it's loans or grants or whatever conditions the Frugal Four will put on whatever grants are given. This is going to be a tremendous part of the economic recovery, but more importantly, it's going to signal that the euro is stronger, for integration is not going away. It's just going to be very positive for European stocks. I think that the rescue fund details are going to be key, but I think that ultimately this is going to provide us with more optimism that finally you're going to see fiscal response from the EU, and that's just going to be very positive for risk appetite for the FTSE and also the DAX.
And Sunday's G20 summit, finance ministers meeting as well.
Yes, so I'm not expecting much from the finance ministers. I think you're going to see broader topics covered, clean energy initiatives. But I think you're going to see, most of the focus remain with the rescue fund discussions in the EU summit. And I think, you know, also on Sunday we do have an interview from President Trump. He'll have a morning interview on Fox, and it could be the beginning of his new campaign strategy that kind of starts to take fold. So I think you'll see lots of Americans focus on that as well.
So what else should we look ahead to for the next 7 days, Ed, to close this podcast today?
Well, I think, you know, next week it's not as busy in the middle. I think, you know, we have Brexit talks resume. That's going to be week long, and I think the expectations are nothing to really happen until we're closer to September. But you'll probably see several political posturing take place over the week. But I think that a big focus will fall on Thursday. You're going to have German consumer confidence released. You're going to have confidence figures from France as well, and the advanced consumer confidence reading for the Eurozone on Thursday. With the U.S., we always get those initial jobless claims, and the labor market is not improving enough. We're still seeing consistently over a million initial claims filed. I think it's going on its 17th consecutive week. Continuing claims are stubbornly near that 17 million level, and that needs to improve. There's been a tremendous amount of stimulus. The reopening efforts, though, have been somewhat reversed in some states, so we could start to see the data head in the wrong direction. So that's going to be a big one to watch on Thursday. And then Friday is going to be jam-packed. We have a lot of economic data, the flash PMIs from the Eurozone. I think that the recovery is supposed to pick up. Germany still remain in contraction, but get closer towards expansion. In the U.S., their market manufacturing PMI and services are supposed to rebound into expansion territory. So a lot of expectations are for continued improvement with this recovery. And I think that now that's going to kind of be the focal point, along with, you know, how the virus numbers are heading, and also to the earnings results from several key companies. We get updates from Microsoft, Tesla. Lots of these high flyers are going to report. And if the tech rally is starting to come back down to earth, you'll probably see that accelerate following some of those results. So I think a lot to stay on top of, but I'll be more focused on the PMI readings and jobless claims for the U.S.
Okay, Ed, have a very good weekend, and we'll speak to you again in a week's time.
Thanks, Johnny. You too.
Was the OANDA podcast from the team behind Jazz FM's Business Breakfast, a daily early morning 30-minute briefing for the day ahead. On air from 6 a.m. Listen to Jazz FM on DAB, online, or just ask Alexa.